welcome to quite the unique edition of the Nonfiction Writers Podcast, talking all things Oklahoma Sooner football. I'm Barry Trammell alongside Joe Masato, and we are coming to you from the open road in the middle of the night. We are on Interstate 35. We have left the great state of Iowa. We are headed for the great state of Oklahoma. We have traversed all the way through Missouri. We're about to get out of Kansas. We have watched football on our laptops on the way home, and it is now the witching hour. The football is over, and it's time to talk football after Oklahoma's 37-27 victory over Iowa State. And Joe, it was a very hot day in Ames, Iowa.
It was hot. It was really, really hot. We showed up in the morning, got there at about 9 a.m., I think.
Yeah.
Got into the press box, and the way it's situated, the sun was peering into an unair-conditioned press box. But we finally got relief from it at about the second quarter. But,
relief from the sun.
Relief from the sun.
Not from the lack of air conditioning.
Right. Right. At least the factors weren't compounded after the first quarter. But all in all, it was a really fun game, I thought.
I thought the Sooners played well. The defense did not tackle that great.
Right.
If you tackle Akeem Butler two or three times, then the whole day looks a little different. But the big receiver for the Cyclones shed four Sooners on one touchdown catch, shed Parnell Martley on another. So, you know, it was not a pristine defensive performance by Oklahoma, not what they've been accustomed to. But the idea that this was going to be a juggernaut OU defense was probably misguided. The best you can hope for is that it's better than last year. The jury's still out on that, but you know, they clearly were better than they were a year ago against Iowa State. You know, Lincoln Riley told us after the game, eerily similar,
yeah,
to last year in terms of backup quarterbacks out there completing a lot of passes for Iowa State. This time, Zeb Noland. The Sooners turned back the Cyclones enough, and Kyler Murray in that offense was spectacular again.
Yeah, I mean, the offense was really good, but I think you touched on it as far as the tackling woes on the defensive side. And we were kind of saying after the game, you know, we expected Mike Stoops to be a little more upset than he was. Got a toll plaza coming up.
We missed time this, Joe. What are we doing?
This will be good.
If we'd have waited like 2 minutes, we could have started the podcast on the other side of the Kansas Turnpike toll booth.
It adds to the ambiance of a road.
Did we get a ticket? Where's the ticket? It's the Max. Oh, it's in there? Okay. It's the Max, whatever it is. By the way,
we owe the Max.
Pack yourself some cash if you're going to travel the entirety of the Kansas Turnpike.
I bet it's $24 both ways, I believe.
Yeah, 13. It's 13.
13. This is great. I mean, we're literally pulling up to the toll booth.
How you doing? 13:45.
Anyway, we'll get back to the defense here pretty soon. This is great.
You need to talk.
I'm cracking up too much. I'm cracking up too much to talk. I'll get back to the defense. Sorry about that. We're through the toll booth now.
I couldn't very well sit there and talk about the OU defense while I'm dealing with a toll booth attendant.
And I couldn't stop laughing, but we're back. Anyway, I expected Mike Stoops to be a little more upset than he was today because we've seen him after some games, and I think they, you know, legitimately are coming away from this game knowing that they just beat a team on the road that came into Norman and won last year, and there was some really miscues on the defensive side. We asked Lincoln Riley about missed assignments. He wasn't really concerned about that. It was more of a tackling issue. Another Iowa State backup quarterback kind of had a pretty efficient day back there in Zeb Noland. I thought that was impressive. But all in all, the offense carried OU again.
Yeah, you know, the Sooner defense Got some stops early, but then they let Keem Butler get going. But the good news, David Montgomery, the Iowa State tailback, never really got free for a bunch of stuff. He had, what, 88 yards on 19
runs.
Carries or 21 carries, whatever
it
was.
I think that's right.
So, but you hold David Montgomery under 100 on a decent amount of carries, you're going to be fine. So this was just it's a little bit different of a dilemma for the OU defense. In years past, it's just been guys running free in the secondary. There wasn't a lot of that, I didn't think. Some of the passes that connected with Zeb Nolan, you know, they converted a fourth down pass on a the guy makes a catch over the middle. It wasn't a great pass from Nolan. He makes a fantastic catch across his body. So, it was not a good defensive performance. However, it wasn't a disaster.
Right.
You give up 27 points on the road. When you Kyler Murray and this offense is your quarterback, you're probably going to go home a winner.
Yeah, I think the only concern as far as – I mean, there's a couple concerns, but when you look at it kind of in the vein of what Iowa did to Iowa State, and we kind of talked about this earlier, but maybe the Cyclones were just having a bad day, but they only scored 3 points against Iowa. Maybe that reflects on how good Iowa's defense might be. But kind of in comparison to what Iowa State did against Oklahoma, they fared far better than they did against the Hawkeyes. So I think that's the only thing you might be a little concerned about if you're the Sooners.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a strange thing. Comparing scores, it's natural, and it's what we probably ought to do, comparing production. Is the Iowa defense that much better than the Oklahoma defense? The answer, very well, likely is. But it's a different kind of game. It's a different quarterback. Kyle Kemp, the regular starter, was going for the Cyclones. Frankly, he didn't play all that good before he was injured in the fourth quarter. So, different things going on. But I did not come away from this game with the OU defense down on them. I sort of suspended. You sort of have to suspend the optimistic tone of this beginning to this season, where everybody got all fired up about the defense. That goes suspended for a week. And frankly, what happens this coming week with Army is completely irrelevant because they play such a unique offense. Whatever
right.
OU does doesn't matter the rest of the year because that's not remotely related to anything they'll do again.
Yeah.
So, I thought Kenneth Murray played pretty well again. Parnell Motley started off well defending Butler, then disintegrated pretty quick. The defensive line got after Iowa State pretty good. You know, I mentioned to you or maybe Ryan Aber during the game, not much of a pass rush, but what was happening was Iowa State's mass protecting. They're keeping a fullback in. They're keeping a tight end in. And there's seven guys blocking
right.
on first and second down. So wasn't much chance of getting to the quarterback, and they're just taking their chances with three receivers and trying to find a mismatch, getting to Hakeem Butler on a smaller receiver. I mean, a smaller defender, and on occasion they did. So it's a pretty good game plan from Iowa State.
It was.
But not a bad game plan countered by OU in that, you know, if the Sooners just make a couple of tackles, you know, they're probably holding Iowa State in the neighborhood of 20 points, and that's winning football.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you mentioned it was a really good game plan, I thought, from Iowa State, and a different sort of offensive game plan than Oklahoma faced in Florida Atlantic and UCLA, just a totally different offense that seemed a little more prepared to do what they were comfortable doing. Let's shift to the offensive side a little bit. I think one of the things I was looking for in this game was first game without Rodney Anderson in the backfield, how the Sooners would fare on the ground. And yet again, second week in a row, I think that Kyler Murray was their leading rusher, and he had some big runs today as well.
Yeah, I counted six quarterback draws dialed up by Lincoln Riley. That's a crazy high number. And then I think it was six more designed runs by Kyler Murray, non-quarterback draws. So that's 12 carries for Kyler Murray off running plays, not scrambles or sacks. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably too many, to be honest with you. I don't know that. Now, he's sliding on about half of those. He's not getting tackled very often. He's getting tackled about, if you look at his carries and about cut him in half, that's how many times he was tackled. But, you know, I don't know that the Sooners want to do that, but he clearly was, at times, was the best option on the ground. I thought the running game got going late, particularly second half, and then late with Trey Sermon. But it was pretty slow to develop. It really was.
I think it's probably more carries than they might want to see from Kyler Murray, but at the same time, I don't think they're going to try to limit him too much going forward, because Lincoln Riley kind of focused on he got more carries because he played the whole game, which is something he didn't do in weeks one and two, which, you know, you can think of that however you want, but it doesn't seem like he's uncomfortable with him getting that amount of carries.
I guess not. He's going to get real comfortable.
Yeah.
Real uncomfortable with it.
As long as Kyler gets comfortable, sliders.
If Kyler Murray limps off, he's going to be real uncomfortable with the idea.
Right.
Because, you know, I was thinking about this. Just 4 weeks ago, there was this, maybe it was even less than that, there was this gigantic quarterback battle, and there's not a dime's worth of difference. Now, we're saying much the same thing about Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. You know, he's playing to a Baker Mayfield level of quarterbacking. And I just, you know, I want somebody that's that good as Murray is playing, somebody that good's going to need to, you know, be protected. You don't want him taking unnecessary hits. But he's playing really well, and we've seen scrambling for 3 years out of the Oklahoma quarterback, talking about Baker Mayfield, but this is a different dimension. These are option plays that Murray can run really well. Quarterback draws that can go for big gainers if he hits the right seam. It does add a different dimension to the Oklahoma offense.
It adds a different dimension, and it's just something when you watch him. He's just so comfortable doing it. I mean, just in our notebook that we did after the game, I just kind of described how he slides. It's just you can totally tell he's got a baseball background. It's different than, you know, kind of an awkward slip to the ground that a lot of quarterbacks do. And sometimes it almost seems like he might be sliding a little too fast, but I think they'd rather be safe than sorry on that. But aside from the running, I thought maybe his most impressive play today was the 75-yard deep ball to Marquise Brown, who had 189 receiving yards in the first half against Iowa State. He actually broke his own record, most receiving yards in a half by a Sooner. He set it last season against Oklahoma State. So another huge day for Marquise Brown.
Well, I mean, they're on an A-B-A-B pattern. Brown was the star against Florida Atlantic. C.D. Lamb stole the show against UCLA. Now it's back to Brown. Just a monster day. 9 catches, 12 targets. Murray and Brown seem to have a pretty good chemistry going. And, you know, the Sooners have a 1-2 punch that's the envy of most teams in the nation. And you saw Brown at his best today. He hit the home run with a 75-yard beauty from Murray. But he also had, a 48-yard play off a short hook over the middle or something. He breaks it and turns it into a 48-yard gain. And a couple of nifty gains off intermediate throws. Took a swing pass early in the game on 3rd and 5 and made 6. Those are the kind of hidden plays that really the difference between winning and losing. So Marquise Brown was, he has made that Biletnikoff jersey that he wore 2 weeks ago, he's made that quite relevant because he's definitely in the discussion.
Well, he wore the Biletnikoff in week one. He had Antonio Brown, whom he's related to, in week two. I asked him, so they basically have to wear team-issued, school-issued stuff on road games, and they can get far more creative at home. And I asked him what he's going to wear against Army next week, and he says that you guys are going to see. So it seems like he's going to plan a special jersey for every home game, and CeeDee Lamb might do it with him. But, I mean, if those guys keep playing like that, they both might be in discussion for that award come season's end. I mean, it's just, I mean, an abundance of riches kind of on the outside for Kyler Murray and this offense and how he's able to use his weapons. And I think that's just one of the – I mean, Kyler Murray has exceeded expectations, I think it's fair to say, but we've also seen how much he has around him.
Well, and, you know, found a new weapon Saturday, Carson Meyer with a big long catch in traffic, the fullback from Tulsa Union. Nobody's ever thought about throwing the ball deep to him, but Kyler Murray did it today, and he made a nice catch.
It's a pretty tough catch.
And it was a nice, you know, it's an element that the Sooners hadn't shown. So keep finding more and more weapons. Miles Tease had a touchdown off a short pass in third down situation.
Yeah. Calcaterra caught a couple of balls. He fumbled on the first one, but he's a guy that I think we expected to be even a little more involved kind of in fall camp leading up to this season, but really hadn't seen it too much. But I mean, he's got a lot of options for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't think the offensive line had a strong game. For one thing, a couple of holding penalties, which will sour any coach on the performance of his line. But two, they weren't opening huge holes for these tailbacks in the post Rodney Anderson era.
Yeah.
Now, Iowa State's a tough defense. It's basically the same defense minus a couple of guys that was one of the three best in the Big 12 last year. Very good defense. So when you're dealing with that, you have to temper the criticism. But I do think that there weren't a lot of running lanes for these tailbacks. I thought early in the game Trey Sermon had two or three good runs, and those runs would get him 3 yards. I mean, but it was a good run just to get the three.
Right.
Later, he popped a 22-yard touchdown run. He looked a lot better. So I think Trey Sermon's going to be just fine as the feature back.
Yeah.
But I don't know that offensive line had its best day.
Trey Sermon seems very durable. I mean, he seems built for this role, even if he doesn't provide the same home run threat that a guy like Rodney Anderson did. But I think Sermon's a guy they can rely on. And just to add something more to the offensive line discussion is what they're doing at center is very interesting. Jonathan Alvarez, the redshirt senior, started week one, then they went to redshirt freshman Creed Humphrey in week two, and then before the game we noticed that it was Alvarez who was warming up with Kyler Murray, and it was Humphrey who was warming up with Austin Kendall, who was back ready to play today, and they've basically kind of flip-flopped the starting role at the center spot, and both of them seem to be getting equal playing time. I'd like to go back and see how many series each one got, but I think Alvarez got at least the first two or three, and then Humphrey came in. But kind of an interesting rotation. And just to get, I guess, into the nuances of it, I mean, Humphrey's left-handed, Alvarez is right-handed, and Lincoln Riley's talked about kind of the struggle of getting used to a left-handed center, which I've never thought about before, but just an interesting thing to watch.
Stunned me, because after the first 2 weeks, I thought that was a clear indication that the momentum had gone Creed Humphrey's way and that he was going to be the main guy. So that was a stunning development to me.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess one other guy we can touch on today that kind of gets overlooked sometimes is Austin Seibert. It was 3 or 3 for field goals, boomed his kickoffs. Well, it was really good punting the ball. I mean, it was interesting because he had a good game. There's no doubt about it. But I think he was the first individual that Lincoln Riley might have singled out in his post-game press conference.
Yeah, and for good reason. I mean, you look at Iowa State kept coming back, cutting that lead to 7. Three times the Sooners' lead was cut to 7. All three times they responded by scoring on the subsequent possession. The last time, with the game on the line, Austin Siebert makes a 42-yard field goal with two something left in the game to make it a 10-point affair and basically snuff out Iowa State hopes. So that was a clutch field goal. He did have an excellent game. All eight of his kickoffs were touchbacks. So he is an excellent weapon. The Sooners are going to have trouble replacing that guy because you're not going to do it with one player. You're going to do it with two, potentially even three.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's pretty invaluable in that sense. And one thing we're going to be looking for in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know exactly how far away he is, but it's a given that he's going to become Oklahoma's all-time leading scorer. He's going to pass Michael Honeycutt, and DeMarco Murray is second on that list. So, it's kind of – kickers are predestined to set school scoring records, but he's going to be the one to do it.
Well, I mean, he had 13 points today, isn't that right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's 13 points today, so good day for Austin Siebert. He's very – he reminds me of Michael Keeling. Old-time OU fans will remember Michael Keeling. He came to OU, I think, W.T. White High School in Dallas, 79 through 82. He was the OU punter and place kicker. And it's not an easy job to do both. You generally end up looking for a way to move a guy out of one of those jobs. And here, Seibert's been doing it forever for the Sooners and doing it well. So he's a little bit of a throwback, but he does seem to be getting better with age. He seems to get better every year.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. It's all in all, it was an interesting game. And speaking of throwback, really looking forward to next week with Army coming to town because the Sooners will face a throwback offense. And I think there's going to be a lot of cool lead-up events. We'll have a lot of coverage on that. But looking forward to that next week's game as well.
Well, it's a special day anytime Army comes to your campus. Been here just the one time, right? In 1959.
Yeah.
1959. The cadets were in Norman. So 41, and that's 59 years ago. So it should be a very special day surrounding Oklahoma football as Army comes. And Army's, the breakout team has had two good years in a row after a long, protracted slump and got a big win today. You know, Army opens the year with a loss to Duke and really wasn't ever in that game. Didn't score in the first half. But Duke's now undefeated, and so Duke's not a bad team. Army's 2-1, and Saturday beat Hawaii, which had been 3-0. So it's not a bad Army team. It'll be fun seeing that triple option, but it's not the kind of team that should scare Oklahoma athletically. The Sooners should be in great shape. Here at 3-0, they should be in great shape to get to 4-0.
Yeah, exactly. Should be a team. They shouldn't give them too much trouble, but just such an interesting component this week, how to prepare for an option attack like Army gives, because, it's a game that, if Army was a legitimate threat to maybe win the game, it's an offense you have to prepare for weeks, and basically they just don't have that long to prepare for it, so should be a lot of fun to watch.
Last thing maybe we want to talk about is some big news came out of the Sooner camp today, which is admission by the Oklahoma coaches, starting with Lincoln Riley, that they're actually looking to redshirt. They're looking at the possibility of redshirting linebacker Caleb Kelly, and Curtis Bolton, the starting linebacker, goes out for one play on Saturday, and Brian Meade comes in, a walk-on from Owosso, comes in, and you think, what's going on with Kelly? Why wouldn't he be coming in, backing up Curtis Bolton? And Lincoln Riley came clean and said, we're actually looking at the possibility of redshirting him. We said, not for sure. Don't go around saying we're going to do it, but we want to keep our options open. He's a good player. We got a good player there with him. Why split the reps between those two when you can have Bolton this year and Caleb Kelly next year? So I thought that was a very interesting development.
Yeah, I can't believe forgot to mention that. I thought it was maybe the most interesting takeaway from the game. I mean, after Riley said that, I think all of us were a little surprised, and then Mike Stoops basically doubled down on it a little bit and said, yeah, that's what we were thinking when we put Brian Mead in the game, and it's just such an interesting career contrast when you've got Mead, who's a walk-on, and you've got Kelly, who's a former five-star guy, and all of a sudden it's Mead going in, even if it's just one play. So Caleb Kelly did play in OU's first two games against Florida Atlantic and UCLA. He actually came into this game fourth on the team with 10 tackles. He didn't start either of those games. A lot of those tackles did come in mop-up time, but he was a guy that's playing and a guy that started 19 games here in his OU career. So kind of a stunning turn to his career if he does indeed redshirt, but that seems to be the plan. Unless, obviously, if a guy like Curtis Bolton got hurt, that would obviously change. But as of now, it seems like that might be the plan moving forward for Caleb Kelly in his junior year to maybe redshirt. He's got two more games he could possibly play, but it's definitely looking like a possibility.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Well, I guess that's going to do it from the open road of Interstate 35. We are now in the great state of Oklahoma, which is our fourth state of the day. We to get from Des Moines, or to get from Ames to Norman, which is where both of us are headed, you drive at least 100 miles through four states. So we're here in state number four of Oklahoma. We'll be home soon. The Sooners have been home for several hours. So good for them. They deserve it. A fun night and then a good rest night after a job well done in Ames, where this victory wasn't dominant, but on the Big 12 road, where Oklahoma has now won 17 true road games in a row, the ramifications of a road trip are just win, baby, especially when you're in conference. That's what Oklahoma did today. It's been another Nonfiction Writers Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.